Let's play that music. Well, hello there.
It's me, welcome. Ari.
It's me, Donnie Winter.
Sorry, I was cosplaying Cthulhu for a minute. Did you see me?
It was a great cosplay. It was very convincing.
It was very convincing.
I was very terrified. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to episode 133 of Restitching the Tapestry. It's great to have you here. We have been stoked to talk about this topic for a while, so we are really excited. Oh, Tiffany Gray is here, and Tiffany Gray is in Ireland. Woo! Oh my goodness.
You're the second person I've known out of the people I've known, because my friend Courtney was also in Ireland recently. So that's the second person I've known recently who's gone to Ireland. So, good
on jealous. You. Super jealous.
Very nice.
That's exciting. So, Tiffany, I hope that we hear some riveting tales of your Ireland adventures. So, what have we been doing and what have we been up to lately?
Oh, my goodness. It's week two of my classes. I finished my big, I don't know if you can see this in the hallway.
My giant
painting is finished. I finished it finally.
Congratulations on that. How long had you been working on it?
I've been working on it for over a month and a half, on and off. I was really kind of stressing about what I wanted to finish it with, but I consulted a few people and I really just kind of pushed over that final edge of what I wanted to do with it. Really, really great energy. I finally cleaned my house. I just need to vacuum. I'm almost caught up on my laundry too.
Jackie says, are we going to see your painting?
If you go to Ari Whipple Art on Facebook, I have it posted there.
Yes. My week has been, well, we're on week five of my semester, so things are starting to get hectic, right? But everything's going pretty well. Today I spent some time cleaning. I actually got to putz around in the garden for a little while. I picked my, what did I say? My eighth giant like container of tomatoes.
I'm so excited. You're just like a tomato factory now.
I know. We have 10 foot tall tomato plants, Ari. 10 foot tall. And I'm kind of excited as well because we have some varieties that I'm going to like take and save their seeds from so I can like have those varieties next year instead of having to buy all those plants. So
it's exciting. You're going to have like a rolling tomato.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, and I'm kind of like, so being that we're nearing October, I'm kind of like in denial of like us going deeper into fall because I know everything's going to die back soon. But honestly, the season's been really good. I need to catch up on my gardening journal. I've been really behind on that, but I have some ideas. I think I might be done with garden therapy videos for the year. I think I said last time I might do one more where it's like final harvest, putting the garden beds to sleep for the winter, all of that jazz. We'll see. We'll see if I do that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Tiffany. I hope that you're having fun over there. I'm super living vicariously through you. Beyond that, though, like I've been doing some creative stuff here and there. I've been journaling this week, and it's been pretty nice. Current event snapshot. We got a lot going on. Well, there's always a lot going on. So, and we're just going to touch on these. We're not going to like really linger on them too much. But there is a looming government shutdown happening right now. Hopefully everyone decides to get with the program and figure that out, because when was the last time the government shut down? Was it 2018?
I don't remember, but yeah.
I think it was 2018, and it was a mess. It was kind of a mess. There have been some new occurrences and updates on some of Trump's indictments, especially the one out of New York regarding like his businesses and properties. And it's looking likely that he might lose his New York properties, which that's a pretty significant thing.
Isn't that where his golden toilet is?
That's a good question. Where is his golden toilet? I need to know where his golden toilet is.
I'm pretty sure that's the one where his golden toilet is, where that's like his main residence, where like his really ostentatious toilet is that he takes like his a very expensive dump set.
You know, I don't know. Like, would I ever want a golden? I don't think I would want a golden toilet.
No, I would not, because after a while it molds to the shape of your butt because it's gold is malleable.
I mean, there is kind of like a vanity about that.
wanting a toilet in the shape of your butt.
Yes. See, for me, as long as my toilet has a bidet, I am good to go. I am good to go. Anyway, we have to talk about poop at some point, and we just did. So there you go, everyone.
All I heard is that recently he skipped the Republican debate, which I didn't even know if he was invited or not.
Which apparently the debate was a hot mess, too.
And he was stumping in Michigan, I think it was, or he was stumping somewhere.
Probably for like a rally or something to that effect.
He was doing a rally or something, and that he, and I was like, how is he rallying? Why is he allowed to campaign? Why is he allowed to do any of that stuff?
That, my friend, is the question of the century, honestly.
Are we under the impression that he's actually going to run for president again?
Well, so speaking of that, President Biden delivered a speech today, which he hasn't like really delivered a lot of speeches. So like he delivered a speech today about maintaining democracy. And I thought that was a super interesting, so he like talked about like the current state of things and how like we are kind of like on the precipice of democracy, like especially being that, you know, we literally have a candidate running who is facing all of these indictments and these legalities, right? Like that's a really huge glaring thing. So like I don't know, like I really hope that 2024 does not turn into a repeat of 2016, because that would be bad.
I'm just hoping that they go, you want to run again for president? I think, like, I understand that, like, anybody can run for president, but, like, he kind of disqualified himself, didn't he?
Well, I guess, yeah, like, what frustrates me is that there are so many other jobs in this world where, like, if you do anything, like, even within the galactic vicinity of the things wrong that he's done wrong, they would not get that job, or they'd be disqualified from that job. But for this, it's like, it seems like a continual justification of everything that he does by those who support. And it's really, I don't know, it's really frustrating. It's really frustrating, because I feel like on the left, at least, like, if somebody does something wrong, and by all means, I'm not saying the left is perfect all the time either, but, like, at least if somebody does something wrong in that area, like, people are like, okay, this person did something wrong,
I just don't know how he keeps doing things despite, like, receiving no consequences, despite, like...
Well, it's because, like, people like him have never had to deal with any sort of accountability, right? So because of that, they kind of feel emboldened, and they feel that they can circumvent everything, right? Which is concerning, because, like, again, the everyday American cannot do that. Like, that is not the reality for everyday Americans, you know?
Because if it were reversed, they would throw the book at him.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Arpy's here. Hey, Arpy, how are you? It's good to see you.
I just don't understand.
I don't know, I was thinking of, I actually talked about this in therapy over the past week, but like I'm just kind of like mentally preparing for like I'm trying to be optimistic, but I'm also in the back of my mind, I'm just like, if this is going to be like the drama that we saw leading into 2016, like we need to be mentally prepared for that because it was very, very taxing.
Yeah, that's basically it. I just got to steel myself because maybe we're just headed into the dark times again. Yeah. Oh man, I just don't.
Yeah, I don't know. Granted, like we could be like, you know, maybe we could be surprised and, you know, it might be completely different. It's like, I'm holding out for some sort of optimism, but at the same time, I feel like looking at like everything the way it is there is a sense of dread, right? I think there is definitely a sense of dread. Well, with that being my
heavy sigh,
existential crisis. Let's do the mission statement, and I believe it's your turn today.
It is. Let's go. We live in a dynamic society where social media shapes us by creating greater opportunities for connection. It has led to a developing understanding of the adversity facing many marginalized communities face, the powers causing the adversity, and those who act as bystanders as atrocities take place in real time. Our goal with this show is to make connections and have challenging conversations about social topics, current events, pop culture, and art. Together, let's weave the threads of understanding with what privileges we have in order to learn, educate, and create in a world that's growing.
Yes, absolutely.
I kind of stumbled there.
I do periodically myself. So, okay. So tonight's, I mean, we've talked about representation in media before, but like we really wanted to talk about the male dominated fantasy and what that looks like in entertainment, like notably like specific subgenres of media, like superhero, sci-fi, fantasy, etc. Before we really get into it, I want to share something. Yes. I finally watched Barbie a couple of days ago.
Oh my goodness!
I finally did it. And it made me a little weepy, especially toward the end. It's very meta. It's very like contemplative of existence, kind of. It's so good. And you know,
did you really? So tell me the truth. Did you relate to Alan?
Absolutely. 1,000. Okay, so this is going to be kind of spoilery, everybody. Oh, Tiffany, maybe I won't be giving away too many spoilers then, since you're watching. But I really find that Barbie itself, the film in general, is an excellent examination and reversal of the male-dominated fantasy in media. Like, and I think that it's kind of fitting that I watched it before this episode, that we both have watched it, because I feel like it definitely is that role reversal that kind of.
My sister said that Weird Barbie and Alan were definitely members of the LGBTQ+ community. I said that it wasn't necessarily LGBTQ+, it was marginalized communities, that people who were, because they were just like all of the people in the clubhouse who were like different. I was just like, it was definitely like marginalized communities in general, but like the people who were in the clubhouse, because Barbie was asexual.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't necessarily think it was LGBTQ+. I think it was necessarily like those who were marginalized, because I related to Weird Barbie because it was like people who played with Weird Barbie too hard and too much. And to me that sounded like possibly autism or like neurodivergency, that it was sort of like there was a sense of like being neurodivergent in some way. But like for me, that it was just a sense of like being different in some kind of way. So there, I got a sense of like that kind of. So it kind of like went across that spectrum. But I told you this before that with LGBTQ plus, there is also a higher ratio of people who are on who are LGBTQ plus that are also disabled. So they do go hand in hand. Weird. So that
absolutely
interesting. Interesting.
So Tiffany says, I don't mind spoilers. Arpy has seen it. Arpy says it was a good commentary, but I was expecting it to be funny before I saw it. I thought there were some aspects that were funny. Tiffany says, I'm on the ace spectrum and I'm demisexual. So like, I'm really interested, especially like when you get to see it, like how you might connect with the characters, Tiffany.
Anyway, feel free to talk about your interrupted your thought, Donnie. What were you going to say?
Oh, no. So like, I mean, obviously if we look and think about like the different groups in the actual film, like there's the Barbies, there's the Kens, and the Barbies like obviously embody every toxic structure that, you know, that's imposed on, you know, women. And for Kens, that like, obviously we see like a lot of like how that toxic structure impacts men as well. And then of course there's Alan, who doesn't fit either of the toxic structures and ultimately feels ostracized and is just like along for the ride, you know, desperately trying to be seen, be acknowledged, to not be in uncomfortable situations. You were talking about Weird Barbie, who very much is also ostracized throughout the entire film. Like that, like I think both of those characters were what created like the real root of the commentary. But also like if like the transformation that Barbie goes through in realizing these structures and then helping the other characters to realize it too, like that was so interesting to me. Like that was super interesting.
It's a critique of patriarchy from the opposite angle. So it's basically like if women were the ones in power instead of men. So it's more digestible for men to understand like, oh, those poor guys, those women have all the houses and all the jobs and all of the things. And those guys don't even have, you know, any clothes or any way to feed themselves or any, you know, and it's sort of like, oh, those poor guys, you know, those guys are so mistreated. And it's like, that is really, they are Knuff, aren't they? It's like, oh, isn't that fascinating? I wonder what that would be like if that were real in our society.
Right. You know, it's just at like thinking more about Alan, like definitely like I think they left Alan's character open enough to be not only representative of what the LGBTQ plus experience could be, but what also, you know, people who just don't fit in either binary feel like in general, right?
Right.
And like, I really resonated with it because like throughout my entire life, I have obviously very seldom fit in with men. Like I have always felt very, very uncomfortable doing what's considered to be, you know, traditional masculine things. But even though I've always been around like women more and I've been like sort of like the planet Pluto in their group, like I'm orbiting, but am I really a planet? Not really. I'm just there kind of a thing. And that really like, that made me really think about that because like, no matter what, like there've always been like these small micro things that have always made me not feel like I am part of the group, if that makes sense, even with like women. So like, it's interesting. I really think they captured it well.
But what's interesting about Barbie is that even as Barbie moves along and she has this perfect life and perfect situation, even though she was created by a woman and she has this perfect society in which she's created, who runs Barbie now is a male dominated society in the real world, that the people who own her are Will Ferrell and the Mattel Corporation, which they show as all men.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting to think about. And most people kind of like glaze over that, but they try to put Barbie back in the box. But in the real world, they sell Barbie as all men selling Barbie to young girls. And that's very fascinating when you think about it, that this all, and that was the critique on the patriarchy, is the all of these men were selling this ideal of this, and that was what was what all the girl was getting so upset about, is that this thing that had originally been, you know, this ideal fantasy of, you know, you could be anything that you want, becoming twisted in the real world, was because men had taken it over.
Yeah, absolutely. And no, those are some excellent like observations about the film. I think that the film did well with creating that commentary and drawing out just how insidious patriarchy can actually be, right?
Mm-hmm. So well, it's part of the male dominated fantasy. It's right. That
was that your convenient segue?
Yes. Well, we were talking about male dominated fantasies a little bit.
Right.
Ken was like, I wanted to do patriarchy, but then when I found out it wasn't about horses, I got bored.
That was really funny. It's interesting though, because like if we look back throughout media, like it's very obvious when the male dominated fantasy becomes like center stage, which is like what, 90% of the time, if not more. And like Barbie just like took that and like flipped it around. Mm-hmm. And it's like I've been thinking a lot about like the different franchises that I love, for example, because like a lot of the franchises that I love until about like recently haven't really kind of subverted that male dominated fantasy that recurs. Well, I'll talk a little bit about that a little bit, but what is the point of centering men in media and catering to their fantasies? What role does it play for advertising, marketing, demographics, and how accurate is this model that has been historically used today? I know you have some like reflections on that based on the.
So basically, men 18 to 25 are the ones who mostly like predominantly like there was a study done in 2018 that said white men 18 to 25 are the ones who make the most ticket sales. Like, for movies. That's why you see a lot of Marvel movies. That's why you see a lot of like action films and things like that. But shortly behind them at 49%, you see white females in the 18 to 25 range. So just, but the thing about it is that movie executives have decided that marketing to white men, they have decided that women will watch whatever their boyfriends are watching, or they'll watch it, it's that usually they won't, that women like what men watch because it's a man's world, and so mm-hmm. they'll watch whatever the guy's watching. So they have things that sometimes cater to women, but mostly it's that women like what guys like, and so mm-hmm.
because they are so used to like deferring
there's often mm-hmm. a deference. So that's what this male dominated fantasy is that because men make more in jobs, you know, strictly speaking, because of culture, and they because of patriarchy, they make more on the dollar, and that they have you know, they're usually the ones who are making more jobs, and they have the higher paying jobs, and they are the ones who are more likely to work than women, mm-hmm. then, you know, it's less likely in our society now because you have two income households and things like that, because it's just less likely that you'll have that. But usually they consider men to be the ones that are the breadwinners in these situations. Historically speaking, that's not usually the case these days because more women have been making more money. But historically speaking, that has been the case. But that's the reason why less women are getting married these days, because more women have been able to support themselves. And I was curious to just look at the numbers about how that affect. But apparently it's still historical, it's still accurate that white men are still the ones going to movies. Because I just saw a study in 2023, a UCLA Hollywood diversity report that kind of upset me. I was just talking about this in the back room, and I was very upset about it because it said, as Hollywood emerged from the pandemic, its biggest film producers dipped in diversity after years of incremental progress, according to a new study by UCLA researchers. So basically it says that even though Hollywood is becoming more diverse and is becoming two-tiered with studio releases, that you do have more diverse studio releases from Hollywood, that you get things like Everything Everywhere All at Once, where you have things like that. But it's actually that you get more diversity in things like streaming service releases from like Netflix and things like that, where you'll get a lot of like diversity in streaming services, but like theatrical releases, they try to play it safe for white males who go to theaters. So they don't tend to, you know, risk it all by doing diversity in theaters, because they want to play it to a white audience. They said there was a quote that really upset me. They talked about with the industry unstable, what we could see was the culture that Hollywood has always relied on when in need of a surefire hit. They think of a surefire hit as a code for no diversity for white lead. It's something that they're comfortable with. So it's saying that diversity is something that is possibly temporary, short-lived, and could be cut at any time. And that's something that they mentioned in this report from Fortune. And that kind of upset me because it's sort of like, well, we'll always cater to the white audience. We'll always cater to white males. And that, you know, that they're the ones that they always market to, because they're the ones who are always spending the money at the theaters 50% of the time. And so they're the ones that we're always marketing to and playing to the audience, because it's sort of like, it's pandering almost, because they're the ones who we are advertising to and marketing to. And that's why you've got to like assuage them somehow.
Yeah, no, those are some interesting source references that you just made there, especially with regard to streaming too. So like, and we're going to be talking about Star Trek here in just a few minutes as well, probably at length, because you know me. But like, so like, obviously Star Trek for a long time has been like kind of like the pinnacle of representation in media, right? Because like as early as like the mid 60s, like it was like really bringing a lot of diverse people to the television screen, you know, in combinations and pairings that had never been seen, and continue that trajectory over time. But like, especially like the 90s series, like they kind of like touched on representation. They kind of like subtly worked on small aspects of unraveling that, you know, male dominated fantasy. But now if we fast forward to 2017 to now, Star Trek is mostly all streaming. All the new series are streaming shows.
Well, you have shows like Star Trek Discovery, which is a show that is considered to have a very diverse cast.
It is one of the most diverse shows there ever has been. Like, there's BIPOC characters, there's LGBTQ plus characters, there's women. Like, much of the cast is women, and that's amazing. However, it's also the series that's garnered like the most criticism because of that, conditioned audience who wants to see a specific thing. And because of all of that criticism, well, this is just my theory. Star Trek Discovery is about to end with the fifth season. They just announced it recently. Any LGBTQ plus characters that were in Star Trek Picard have either been written out or they have been like altered. So like their relationship isn't either present or centered. And then of course, Star Trek Strange New Worlds, like it has some pretty good representation, but like you don't really get like the depth of those interpersonal relationships. So like I think that's an example of how what you were saying though, like the fact that in the streaming world, which is where all of this, work toward, altering that male-dominated fantasy is taking place, like it's fleeting. Like people do it, like it seems like these companies are doing it to kind of be like, okay, we checked off the diversity box, let's move forward, kind of a thing.
Well, it centers on cis white heterosexual male fantasy of, we've got to keep them happy first. That it's sort of like we've got to make sure that they are centered in their universe, and so we've got to play, make sure that we have the hot chick, or we've got to have the funny guy, so they, some kind of like comedic situation, or some kind of like, nudge nudge to make them feel like they're smart or they're witty or they're interesting, that character that is charming that they can place themselves into, so they feel as though, like when you watch Star Trek, there's always like a Picard or a Kirk or someone that they can that's a white man that they can place themselves into as like a Mary Sue, where they can feel as though they are like the most
That they are the captain.
that they are the captain of some kind, that they are this character that is dynamic and smart and charming and funny and interesting, and that always gets the job done.
Whereas if we look at, okay, so we're just delving into Star Trek and I'm totally fine with it. So if we look at Star Trek Voyager, which is like the first Star Trek series with like a female captain, or Star Trek Discovery, which focuses on like a female character, like a lot of the criticism from the male viewers is always that character's irrational. That character's not logical. This character cries too much. This character's too emotional. Classic misogyny, though, because like in reality, what do men say to women whenever they express something, oftentimes?
Right, that their emotions are too much, and that and it's because they have that Vulcan sense that they're not expressing their emotions, which is the highly stoic male that's taught to not express their emotions, to man up and to not feel those things, because it's the male dominated fantasy that says that I am a man, I am a strong buff man, I don't need to feel those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so, I mean, if we look at the history of sexism in Star Trek, and then we'll come back to, because I want to talk about the Joss Whedon effect. We'll be talking about that here in a few minutes as well. But like, obviously, there was considerable sexism in Star Trek. I mean, one of the first instances of it is in the pilot episode of the original series, which had like completely different characters. Like literally the captain like makes a comment about like women being on the bridge of or being allowed on the bridge of the Enterprise. And it's like obviously that was fixed like once the actual original series happened. But that was kind of like the first gauge of like, oh no, like this isn't doing what you want it to do. Then we get in the original series, we get like Lieutenant Uhura, who is a,
Could you imagine if they stuck with that? No vaginas on the bridge. You bleed too much.
like that. Star Trek would be a drastically different thing. It would be a drastically different thing. But like, so obviously, as the original series happened, like, we did get some representation. So we got, like, Uhura, who was a Black woman, right? Like, that was monumental. Mm-hmm. We got Nurse Chapel, who worked in the medical field. We got, who was also the wife of the creator of Star Trek, who played her.
We got George Takei.
Yeah, we had him. We had so much diverse. We had, there was another woman, Janice Rand, the character Janice Rand. She was kind of like the captain's yeoman, his like assistant, I guess, but like he lost it over. There's a lot to unpack, you know, like Captain Kirk was very lusty.
It was very again, male dominated fantasy. Yeah. I mean, there were strides, but not, you know, it still needed work.
But here's the thing about sexism in Star Trek. So like these women are present, but do the stories ever center on them? Are they ever instrumental in the actual story of each episode? Not often.
I wouldn't say until like you get to say like Next Generation. Yeah. I feel like they really try to center women in Next Gen a lot. You get
at least a lot more than the original.
I think that there's still a bit of sexism in Next Gen, but oh, yeah. I think there is quite a bit of sexism in Next Gen. But yeah. I think that they do center more stories around, you know, what's the one with the female captain in the 80s? What's her name? Oh God, I can't remember.
Captain Janeway? Are you talking about Star Trek Voyager?
Yes, Janeway. I haven't watched that series, but I heard really good things about it.
It's my favorite series. It's on my watch list. But even that had some sexism in it too. Like, I mean, you've heard of the character 7 of 9, right?
Yeah.
So like midway through Voyager, 7 of 9 was introduced as a means to appeal more so to the male audience. So like for those last few seasons, she's like in this like tight, like cat suit, like love the character, but like you can see kind of like how that
plays into the male domination.
Appeal to the male, yeah, that appeal to the male gaze. But like even if you look at Next Gen, like there were like the women in Next Gen, like many of the actresses have spoken about like how they had to really advocate for the stories that they got, because like they were often kind of relegated as the secondary character, or like they didn't really get a lot of development. And I think that's one easy way to spot the male dominated fantasy like manifesting in media, as when the women who the female characters just don't really get the meaty stories that are like good for character development, right? Okay, so Joss Whedon. Do we know who Joss Whedon is? So Joss Whedon is a very well-known writer, producer, director, all etc., right? Who gained fame in the late 90s, early 2000s, because he is the creative mind behind Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right?
Did you say his name right? Joss?
Joss Whedon. Did I say Josh? Joss Whedon.
Yes.
Oh, Taylor's here. Hey, Taylor. It's good to see you. Hope that you're doing well.
Hello, Taylor. We're just talking about Josh.
Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon. So Joss Whedon is known for like series like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, Firefly, like these like pretty like monumental shows in sci-fi fantasy, like in the 2000s.
Oh my goodness. But
the thing is though, like Joss Whedon over the years has tried to illustrate himself as a feminist, as someone who's very progressive. However, cast and crew of these different shows have said otherwise.
Well, at the time it seemed like he really was, because he was doing strong female lead characters. So at the time it seemed like, you know, with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, with like, did he do Charmed as well?
No, he did not do Charmed, but Charmed has a lot of sexism in it too.
But he did like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He did a lot of early Marvel movies. So
yeah, he did Avengers and then Avengers: Age of Ultron. Like, Two but he had, big he
wrote,
movies.
It seemed like he wrote really strong female characters. So you would think like, oh yeah, he's definitely like, you know, he really cares about women. But then when he started to like dig below the surface of like how he wrote women, like when you start to like actually like analyze how he wrote those women and like you put it in a time capsule, you wait like 15 years mm-hmm. and you get past the nostalgia of your youth and you look back and you start to like blow off the dust of Joss Whedon and you really start to like analyze Joss Whedon and you go back and you're like, hey, you're that dude I used to know in high school. And then you look at him, you're like, I thought you were so cool, Joss Whedon. I used to watch all that stuff that you used to create in high school. And Joss Whedon's like, he like burps because he like is drunk or something. And you're like, oh my God, I never knew. And he like feels up somebody or something. And you're like, oh my God, Joss Whedon is actually a secret sexist. Who would have guessed?
the scenario I would say is pretty accurate. Taylor says, it's impossible to fully divorce ourselves from misogyny coming from our culture. I agree.
Yeah.
It's so like entrenched in conditioning. And I know in the past, like we've talked about like undoing like our own like misogyny or internalized misogyny. So like it's impacted all of us in different ways. Right.
And right. He's writing shows for young white cis men and it's male dominated fantasies. He's writing women from the perspective of a man for men.
He's writing these male dominated white cis stories, but throws female leads in there to get the girlfriends to be like, oh, while they're watching the shows with their significant others, like we were talking about.
Okay,
earlier.
Let's talk about Firefly for a second. Firefly did okay. So Firefly is.
Have you watched Firefly?
I have watched Firefly many times.
I love Firefly.
Firefly is a rare exception to the rule, and even in Firefly, there's still
crumbs of sexism. Yeah,
there's still because one of the girls, the engineer girl, is kind of a pick me if we're being honest, and the companion, the courtesan.
Oh yeah. I need to rewatch that. It's been a long time since I watched it, but. Like, I think that show, like, I don't think the sexism in it is as glaring as, like, say, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But, like,
yeah.
You can see the subtleties in it. And I think that because it's Joss Whedon, you can kind of, like, pick up on the consistencies. Yeah, Taylor says Zoe stands up to time and that's it. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, like, I will give him credit where credit's due in the sense that he did do some really good things for representation in those like early years where like there was so little representation. But at least now we're at a point, kind of like we've talked about in prior episodes, where we can talk about like aspects of that representation that make it quality representation versus not so good representation, right?
It's just like when you look at old stuff and you're like, wow, that was a time and a place and now we can do better.
Right.
Like everybody who like glorifies like Joss Whedon is so great. And it's like Joss Whedon was so great. We can do better now.
Absolutely. Tiffany says, I have a good a comeback from misogynist jerk when they yell at me for being too emotional. I say, well, at least I have a heart. Yep. Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's just like people get so nostalgic about these shows and all of these situations, like all of this stuff that like this person did. And it's just like, you know, they don't stand the test of time. Like they don't, you know, you get so nostalgic about this stuff. And it's like, you look back on it and you're like, wow, that was real cringy. Like it does not stand up.
Right. Right. I don't know. Going back and watching those things, because I've not watched Buffy in a long time, but I've recently watched like the first two Avenger films, and you can tell that they are very much like women are often relegated to like the background, like they're just not really like they're strong and they're great.
But the first Avenger films kind of remind me of. What? They kind of remind me when you're like a little kid and you're playing on a playground and like the kids all are in these like super gendered roles and like they all pick their roles. And so it's all these little boys and then they let the two little girls play with them like their little sisters or something. And they're like, you can play this one, I guess. And so like, and it's sort of like, but they made a movie about it and it was adults.
Yeah. That's a very good analogy. That's a very good analogy. But like if we think about like the Joss Whedon effect in general, like obviously like it has the allure usually of quality representation. And there are some instances where it's good, but like a lot of the characters who are women or who are BIPOC or LGBTQ plus characters, they're usually relegated to the background. They turn into like a villain character. They might spontaneously die. Joss Whedon is definitely known for killing off characters spontaneously, especially the characters that are designed to be the, you know, diversification, right? So like, yeah, these characters are relegated to the background. They're killed off, or they like have some sort of like mind-boggling trauma that causes them to.
When you think of Marvel movies, do you ever just think of like who has all of, like when you think of like white guys, like who has all of that time to watch all of the movies in the Marvel series? Like, how many movies were built up to being into the first series of into the first Avengers movie? It was probably like 5 or 6, wasn't it?
I would say so. But you know, people could ask me that same question of like, Donnie, how do you watch 900 episodes of Star Trek?
But you think about it, these are guys going to the theater to watch all of the movies up until the first, like, it's so intense for me. Like, you think about it, just like, these guys are going to the movies like every 6 months or so. Well, every 2 months.
Yeah, like, I think Marvel has kind of lost control of itself over the years. Like if you, like obviously the early 2010s, like early to mid 2010s, like Marvel's like zenith, like very popular.
They have a chokehold on, they did have a chokehold on the theaters, it seemed like.
And I would say that I think right now we're experiencing a superhero fatigue. Because like you notice that a lot of the big Marvel movies aren't doing as well. You know, and I don't know. And maybe it's because like people, like maybe the.
Well, they played their storylines out. How many movies can you make about the same sort of thing?
Well, and the thing is like in a franchise, you can only appeal to that male dominated fantasy so much until it loses its luster, right?
Right.
And then like,
well, and it's just that the storylines are so weak after a while. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Tiffany says, at least we get that delicious movie theater popcorn. Oh, I know. Ooh. Taylor says, to paraphrase Barbie, quote, I can hold both emotion and logic, and it doesn't diminish my power. It strengthens it, end quote. Yes. probably one of my favorite takeaways from that film. Definitely. I really think that films like that and Everything Everywhere All at Once are working crucially to change the playing field quite a bit.
I seriously, last year, was going to the movies every week. I was going to the movies every week. And guess what? I was watching horror films. I was watching quality cinema films. Don't give me Marvel movies. Give me good cinema. You know what? If they had put the Banshees of Inisherin on the theater screen, I would have definitely watched that in the theater. That was such a good movie. And that was on HBO. But like, Everything Everywhere All at Once was in this theater for like four months. Mm-hmm. Why was that in the theater for 4 months? I don't understand. Like, they just didn't have the movies to fill it up. Do you know what the best movie last year, in my opinion, was? There were three movies that were the best movies last year. Bones and All.
Mm-hmm.
Pearl. And, oh God, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
I've not seen any of them, but I don't go out to see a lot of movies anymore.
They were all three horror movies, and they were all three amazing.
But when you think about it, though, like, the horror genre is always, always underestimated by Hollywood. Always. Same with sci-fi.
And none of them were male-dominated fantasies at all. Pearl was tragic. A tragic, mm-hmm. tragic movie. Tragic.
See, the thing is, the only time horror breaks out is around Halloween,
do you know when I watch Pearl?
I'm saying it gains like audience wide acknowledgement around Halloween, and it's always through the big franchises, right? Not like these standalone films that are diamonds in the rough, right? And the same thing goes for sci-fi. Like, the closest thing that we get in big cinema with regard to sci-fi right now is probably Star Wars, and that's stretching it, you know? And I'm kind of like, I do love Star Wars, but I'm kind of getting exhausted of Star Wars as well because it's been Marvelized. And then when they do incorporate representation and have it be quality representation that doesn't appeal to that male-dominated fantasy, like, the male-dominated audience gets butthurt over that. And then they're like, this isn't Star Wars. Like, this, we don't acknowledge these films. These aren't part of it, you know? This isn't canon. Sorry, I just went on a tangent.
Yeah, it was good.
thank you. But no, like, I think that I really hope that the trajectory, maybe like now that the writer's strike is coming to an end, now, like, hopefully, like, the SAG after strike will be, you know, like, hopefully they will have their valid needs met, right? And hopefully after that, maybe we might get some quality stories again that,
I know, that's why
show the world for what it is.
That's why I haven't gone to the movies this year, is because last year the movies were amazing. So many good movies last year, but the movies this year have just been so stinko. Here's a male dominated fantasy movie. They made a movie about, it was a Ben Affleck and Matt Damon movie. And it was about,
when I hear those names together, I already know that it's going to be,
it was about the Nike shoe brand from the perspective of the marketers of the Nike shoe brand for Michael Jordan shoes. Not about Michael Jordan getting a shoe deal or Michael Jordan as his perspective of the player. It was how they marketed the Michael Jordan shoes.
What movie was that?
I don't know, but it was back in March, and I hate that. It sounds
boring as hell.
It sounded awful, and I
like, somebody could record 2 hours of grass growing, and I'd watch that.
But it was like, it it was like it was so it it decentered the black story of Michael Jordan and recentered it on the white advertisers. And so for me, I was just like, it was white male dominated fantasy. And I was just like, I am not going to go to the movies this year. This has sealed the deal for me. Wow. I movies are going to suck this year. I already know this is a sign of the times that movies are going to suck this year.
Yeah. And I think that it's we're probably going to have a good couple of years of that because
next year the movies are going to be fire because they're all, because all of those people on SAG have time on strike are all tippy tapping their little scripts in private.
They've been writing as a good writer should.
Guarantee they're all making fire scripts. Yeah, why right now.
They've had down. I mean, of course they've been. You know, maybe they've had to work other jobs too. You never know. But I'm telling you,
next year after this writer's strike, we're gonna get some fire movies, guaranteed.
Did you see that part? Like, let's talk about the strike or the resolution. Like, did you see that AI is like now like completely off the table? Like, it's not usable now. That was one of the stipulations, and I think that it worked out.
Guaranteed we're gonna get some fire storylines next year. Some really good stories.
I hope so too, because we need it. We absolutely need it.
I am so excited. I am so, like, everything is just gonna be super, super cool. People are gonna be super, because they've had time to think about this. They've had time think about this and perfect their writing. Guaranteed.
Yeah. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be good. I hope that, like, I have no doubt that we're going to get some quality content. It'll be, a lot of people are super angry because they're like, we have to wait. And it's like, but you're waiting for a good cause though. Like, you want good stuff, right? You don't want like AI generated.
I swear to God, all good things in good time. I'm telling you, the best writers come up. We're going to see like an influx for the next like year and a half. We're going to see so many good storylines. It's going to be the market's going to be so competitive in the next like year.
I hope so. So we do plan on, like, there's so much we could talk about with this topic.
We didn't even get to like half of our.
Oh, no. Well, and we knew this. That's why we decided to schedule this as like a two-part episode, because like there's so much more to talk about and to unpack. Hell, in the future, we could do a part three to it. You never know. We'll see. But like, there's a lot more to break down, a lot more to discuss. Because like, obviously this is something that like we're in 2023, but like this male dominated fantasy, like in media, is still very much front and center. Like we were saying earlier, we see it manifesting itself in films. We see it, you know, manifesting itself in streaming, even though streaming has tried to kind of like create, you know, some sort of oasis for representation and, you know, undoing all of that. But no, there's plenty more that we're going to talk about. And it's
Tiffany, I will write that script for you. I want to see a movie where I rescue Smeagol from Mount Dew and fall in love. I will write that script for
you. That would be like, Smeagol deserves a redemption story. Just saying. You know, like, that's so, it's interesting because over the course of this conversation, did you notice me writing? I was writing some notes. I was writing down episode ideas for the male gaze, the female gaze, and the LGBTQ+ gaze in media. And I think that so the Lord of the Rings trilogy, not perfect when it comes to representation, but it does very much appeal to the female gaze.
Mr. Darcy from Pride and Prejudice.
Mr. Darcy. Oh, Mr. Darcy.
What have you done to Mr. Darcy? Oh, he touched my hand. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I can see the wrist. Oh,
whenever. they made a joke about that in Barbie, about how she is depressed Barbie, and she watches Pride and Prejudice, the BBC version of Pride and Prejudice, over and over again. Don't come for me, but when I get depressed, I definitely watch clips of Pride and Prejudice over and over and over.
See, for me, it's either that or Anne of Green Gables. I don't know if you have you ever seen that? It's the Pride and Prejudice of Canada.
Absolutely. But oh god, just watching Colin Firth just jump into the lake.
So, question for you, Bridgerton.
Bridgerton.
What does Bridgerton do?
Okay.
Is that something that we should shelve for the next episode?
Yes.
All right, everyone, we are ending in a cliffhanger tonight. I hope that, like, this is a cliffhanger. I asked about Bridgerton, and we're going to get Ari's reaction to Bridgerton.
I have to... Ooh, yes, Bridgerton.
You're not under... Have you watched it?
I've watched the first season of Bridgerton.
Okay, so you have that context. Okay, I'm not, like, holding you to watching the second season if you don't want to, but... I think that Bridgerton will be a very interesting conversation to have when we continue our conversation about the male-dominated fantasy. And whether or not Bridgerton shifts that at all or just simply falls within, like, the same stuff. So,
is that male-dominated gaze or female gaze? That's interesting.
Right. And honestly, like, that could even be saved for the female gaze in media episode that we might do eventually in the future. So... my friends, this has been a great conversation. We have unpacked a lot, but we are going to bid adieu until next time. And just know that we love you and that we hope that you have a wonderful rest of your evening. Talk to you later. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.